Englandy. This is the moment the crowd have waited for. Just look at him go.
Congratulations, Catherine, on your wonderful performance in winning the gold medal in the 400 metre event of the Commonwealth Games.
Ian Thorpe really going for it. 3:40.17. This is absolutely amazing.
Tracy Wickham, a great world record here in Edmonton, and there it is, a world record.
The Diamonds Commonwealth drought has broken.
The hockey revolution has a golden uprising.
Adam Ayres, congratulations, and a games record. Adam Ayres has got a hat-trick of gold medals at the Commonwealth Games.
This is something to savour, something to remember for the rest of your life.
Get set, Australia. Welcome to Gold Coast Gold. Here's your host, Dave Colbert.
Hello and welcome to episode 36 of Gold Coast Gold. I'm David Colbert. Two big team announcements this week, with the athletics and the cycling teams being confirmed, and plenty of other news as we quickly get closer to the Games. And with the Winter Olympics underway, we'll speak with Jess Gallagher, the Parasport whiz who's the only Australian athlete to win medals at the Summer and Winter Paralympic Games. Jess has been selected to compete in the cycling events at the Gold Coast Games, and we'll talk about all things elite sport with her shortly. But before we speak with Jess, and as we count down with just six Fridays to go to the Gold Coast Games, let's take a look at the headlines from another big week in Commonwealth Games news. After four big days on the Gold Coast, our track and field athletes have been confirmed in the team, with 51 of them confirmed by Commonwealth Games Australia in the track and field team. They join 14 team members already selected in the marathon and long distance events on the track, along with para athletes announced in January. The team will be headlined by defending 100 metre hurdles champion Sally Pearson, discus champion Danny Stevens, and 1500 metre wheelchair racer Angela Ballard, along with the previously selected marathon champion from Glasgow, Michael Shelley, Catherine Mitchell in the javelin, Ben Harradine in the discus, and Lauren Wells in the 400 metre hurdles are all headed for a record equaling fourth Commonwealth Games. At just 17 years of age, Bindiri Oboya of New South Wales becomes the youngest Australian 400 metre athlete to be selected for the Games in that event. And another 17-year-old, Riley Day from Queensland, who won the sprint double on the weekend in the 100 and 200 and won the inaugural Betty Cuthbert medal, has been selected in the 200. Both Oboya and Day won gold at the Bahamas 2017 Commonwealth Youth Games. In one of the many highlights of the championships, previously selected Isis Holt christened the new Carrara track with a world record in the T35 100 metres, bettering her own world mark with a time of 13.37 seconds to win her first Australian title. The full list is available at Commonwealth Games Australia website, with the final team including additional announcements about spots that have yet to be filled. They'll be coming in the coming days. In cycling, Commonwealth Games Australia has announced a strong 36-member team to contest the Games. Reigning Commonwealth Games champions Stephanie Morton, Matthew Glatzer and Annette Edmondson headline the track selections, in addition to the return of 2010 gold medalist Cameron Meyer and Carly McCulloch. Reigning national road champions Alexander Edmondson and Shannon Melseed, triple world championship medalist Katrin Garfoot and 2006 Commonwealth Games road race gold medalist Matthew Heyman feature in the road selections. The team will vie for 26 gold medals, with 16 on the track, 4 in paracycling on the track, 4 on the road and 2 in mountain bike. The tandem paracycling selections are led by 2016 world champions Jess Gallagher and her pilot Madison Jansen, and we'll speak with Jess shortly, while Bradley Henderson will make his debut with pilot Thomas Clark, who won bronze at the 2014 Games. 2014 bronze medalist and dual Olympians Daniel McConnell and Rebecca McConnell will contest the mountain bike cross-country competitions. The full team is also available at the Commonwealth Games Australia website. In netball, Victorians Emily Mannix, Kate Maloney and Tegan Phillip, alongside Queenslander Gretel Tippett, will join the 12-player team for a training camp at the Netball Centre of Excellence at the AIS. The camp, held in early March, will be the first time the Diamonds Commonwealth Games team comes together since their selection. Australia will open its 2018 Commonwealth Games campaign against Northern Ireland on Thursday the 5th of April, before its remaining pool matches against Barbados, South Africa, Fiji and Jamaica. In hockey, Hockey Australia has announced that the Kookaburra's 18-member team for next month's Sultan Aslan Shah Cup in Malaysia World number one Australia will take on hosts Malaysia, Rio Olympic gold medalist Argentina, India, England and Ireland in the tournament, which will be held in early March. From the World League final squad last year, Tom Craig, Trent Mitten and Flynn Ogilvy all return after injuries, whilst goalkeeper Andrew Charter and young defender Tim Howard are included after good form in the recent test series against the Netherlands. Meanwhile, the Hockey Roos have embarked on a team training camp in Western Australia's southwest. Australia's recently completed a busy period of 9 matches across back-to-back international series against Japan and Spain ahead of the games on the Gold Coast. The Hockey Roos 18-member team for the Commonwealth Games will be announced in mid-March. The Hockey Roos are chasing a 4 straight Commonwealth Games gold medal, and they're pooled with New Zealand, Canada, Ghana and Scotland. Australia's first game of the tournament is against Canada on Thursday, the 5th of April. In triathlon, 5-time world champion Bill Chaffey will go into April's Games in the best shape of his life after using all of his experience to master windswept conditions in the inaugural ITU Para Triathlon World Cup in Devonport. The 42-year-old Gold Coaster made a spectacular return to elite racing for the first time since last May to take the win. And it came on a day which also saw reigning 26-year-old Para Triathlon World Champion Emily Tapp take out the Women's World Cup title ahead of 29-year-old former Ironman triathlon Lauren Parker, who was racing in only her second major event. For the wheelchair athletes, the results come in the countdown to the official announcement this week of the Australian Para Triathlete team for the Games. And for Chaffee and Tapp, it's been a long time coming because they were automatically nominated last April. In volleyball, the match schedule for the 36-match preliminary stage of the men's and women's competitions has been announced. The Australian men's and women's teams will both open their accounts in the beach volleyball competition on day one, with the Australians taking on Cyprus in the afternoon session, and Australia's men's team facing Fiji in the final match of the evening session. Each nation will play 3 matches during the preliminary stage of the competition, with the two highest-ranked teams from each pool and the 2 best third-ranked teams from all pools advancing to the quarterfinal phase. The Australian teams in men's and women's will be announced shortly. And finally, after completing its visit to Victoria, the Queen's Baton Relay has continued its journey across South Australia, visiting the picturesque coastal communities of Coffin Bay and Port Lincoln. Heading to Port Lincoln, excited locals and schoolchildren lined the streets to cheer on the 2-time Commonwealth Games gold medalists from 1982 and 1986, the tuna fisherman himself, Dean Lucan. And that's this week's Commonwealth Games news. A special guest on Gold Coast Gold with just 6 Fridays to go to the Games is Jess Gallagher, and we thought it was a perfect time because Australia's only ever had 1 athlete that's won a medal in Olympics or Paralympic competition at both Summer and Winter Games, and it's Jess, who has been a Winter Olympian at the Paralympic Games and also a Summer Paralympic representative as well as winning world titles, etc., and will go to the Games in cycling, if that's not enough on her busy schedule, having competed in Rio in that event as well. So, Jess, welcome to you. Cycling team just announced, and now it's real. You're off to the Commonwealth Games.
Thank you. Yeah, it's incredibly exciting. In particular, it's a really big decision for me to make whether I go for another Winter Paralympics, given that it's held in March and the Commonwealth Games are April. And I stuck with cycling for the opportunity to race on a home soil and at a major championship at the Commonwealth Games. And, yeah, very excited that it's 6 Fridays, did you just say?
6, yep.
Very exciting.
It's getting a bit close. When we first started off this, we're up to episode 36. So, you know, with 35 Fridays to go, and it seemed like a long way away, now it's on our doorstep. There's so much to talk to you about, but let's just start off with the Winter Olympics that are on at the moment. And just today, in fact, as we record this edition of Gold Coast Gold, the Paralympic team has been announced for Pyeongchang, with 13 athletes going to the Games, headlined by the 2-time Paralympian and world champion Matthew Goulet and Joni Bradenhurst as well, the snowboarder who's the IPC Crystal Globe holder. You must watch the Winter Games with a lot of fond memories and admiration, like we all do, but a lot of fond memories of your time as a winter sports competitor.
Oh, absolutely. It's very close to my heart. I've medalled at the past 2 Winter Paralympics, and we don't have any returning medalists for this Paralympics coming up. And, you know, I know just how hard it is to win a Winter Paralympics medal, and there's just so many variables, so many things that are outside of your control that winter athletes have to deal with. And it's been really exciting to actually be home to be able to watch the Winter Olympics. Normally I'm over in Europe preparing for the Paralympics. And so, yeah, I've really enjoyed it. There's a little bit of FOMO. I certainly get the wobbles when I watch it and sort of miss being a ski racer, but certainly very happy with the decision I've made in terms of sticking around with track cycling.
When you grew up and you've got a vision impairment, which we'll get to in a moment, did you possibly believe that you could achieve what you've done in sport, going to Winter Paralympics, World Championships in athletics and cycling, Paralympic Games as well? Incredible.
Yeah, no, never. Absolutely. I wasn't diagnosed until I was in year 12, so I was 16, just going on 17. Grew up playing elite junior level netball and basketball. So for me, the dream was to represent Australia at a Commonwealth Games as a netballer or a basketballer. You know, my earliest child memories are, you know, sitting on the side of the netball court watching my mum play and just wanting to be like her and aspiring to represent and wear the green and gold. And I was on all the talent pathways for netball and basketball. Most of the girls that are on the netball team I've played with in Victorian state teams or played against at national championships. And actually when I received the diagnosis of my eye disease, I'd actually just come back from the national championships that I'd won with Victoria and, you know, had teammates with the names of, you know, Caitlin Thwaites, Renee Inglis, Julie Coletto. You know, we'd all just won a national championship together, and I came home to the diagnosis that I'd lost over 90% of my vision. And so it's pretty incredible to think about, you know, how my life has changed. And it's also been really cool to watch those girls, you know, go on and represent Australia as netballers. So it's pretty amazing. You know, even coaches, my state coaches were Kirsty Keplich-Burrell and Kathy Fellows, who are the Magpies head and assistant coaches. So yeah, I've been around sport for a long time, and now with all the different sports under my wing, it's really nice to be able to see people who have played an integral role in my development as an athlete now transpire into the completely different worlds that I'm in now as a Paralympic athlete.
How quickly did your vision deteriorate?
It's hard to say. My mum recalls that I've always sort of struggled with vision. So we're not really sure when, you know, if I ever had 100% vision or when it sort of started deteriorating. As a child, I had been to an optometrist 3 or 4 different times and received a new pair of glasses, told that the glasses would help. And then I'd always go home and complain to mum that, you know, they weren't helping. And she was like, well, I don't know what to do. You know, we've seen the people and they've said that these are supposed to help. And, you know, the hard thing was that goal attack and goal shooter were my main positions. And so how on earth was this person who had such incredibly high scoring averages and was good at doing well at school be someone who could be classed as legally blind? And it wasn't until that year 12 sort of, or year 11, year 12 stage where I think my eyesight started deteriorating quite significantly. And that was, you know, looking back now, it was indicated by, you know, my scores started, or my averages started decreasing, and I was really struggling to try and, you know, still make the teams, and but being so frustrated with the fact that there were things that I was struggling with as an athlete. But never in a million years would I think that I would be diagnosed as somebody who was legally blind. It was certainly a shock to everyone.
And how long did it take you to dust yourself off, pick yourself back up and refocus on a new sporting goal?
Yeah, look, it's a hard transition, absolutely. I've always been someone who's fairly straight to the point, and, you know, mum recalls me saying, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about it, so what's the point of being upset? You know, let's just move on and figure out the things that I can do in life. And I had no idea that Paralympic sport existed. You know, fortunately now, thanks to improvements in media coverage, I think most children know or have heard of the Paralympics, but certainly when I was 16 and 17, you know, I was on the pathways to elite sport, and not even one person in those systems had mentioned to me this thing called the Paralympics. And so it took 4 years before I discovered that there was sport for people with disabilities and that you could represent your country as a person with a disability. And in that time frame, I started my osteopathic degree at university. I was still playing netball, but I'd started going from, you know, being in the team to being the next goaler out who wouldn't make the team, and just started really finding it so difficult to see the ball and to shoot. And it was incredibly heartbreaking because it was a sport that I'd spent my entire life playing, and to find myself not capable of the things that I had expected of myself or wanted out of myself was just incredibly hard to come to terms with. And I had to quit playing because I just couldn't see the ball anymore. And it was at that time, I think it was in my second year of university, that I had a friend who was going over to Colorado to work as a ski instructor. And she invited me to go overseas with her. And I just thought, you know what, like I've lost this ability to play sport. And it was such a pivotal part of my life, and I'm completely missing it. And, you know, let's try something new. And so I found myself over in Vail in Colorado, working at a ski resort as a cashier at a on-mountain restaurant. And that's where I learnt to snowboard. And it's incredible to think that that decision played such a huge role in how my sporting career has played out. You know, if I hadn't have said yes to that, I never would have been a ski racer. And it's still crazy for me to think of myself as an alpine ski racer. And that decision was what, in the end, led to the opportunity happening a few years later.
Not just any old alpine ski racer, but twice a bronze medalist in the slalom and then the giant slalom in 2010 and then 2014. Before that, though, you decided that athletics was going to be your thing. And so, and almost, you know, ironically, for someone who's being diagnosed as being legally blind, ironically, in 2008 at the Beijing Paralympic Games, your vision was determined to be too good to be able to compete, and right at the last minute.
Yeah, that's right. I'd had the tests done in Australia, and it was sort of business as usual. It's standard practice for a new athlete at that stage. I was so new to Paralympic sport, but I'd been able to transition my athletic skills from, you know, netball and basketball to athletics, and had equaled the world record in the shot put at the pre-departure camp before we were to head over to Beijing. And, you know, it was just such an exciting time. It was this brand new world of, you know, and of opportunity for me to be a person with a disability but still wear the green and gold. You know, I partially deferred my master's degree so I could train full time. I went on scholarship at the VIS, and it was just heaven that I was finally being able to fulfill this dream and to sit at the medical centre and have the specialist tell me that one of my eyes was eligible but the other wasn't was just completely earth-shattering. And the irony being that in trying to console me, he said that my eyesight would get worse in 6 months, and so that I'd eventually be eligible. But that just made things even worse because it was as close to being an athlete without being one. And that was a huge eye, no pun intended, but a huge eye-opener for me in terms of, you know, developing emotional intelligence and handling just the highs and lows of sport, because I was really fortunate that I got to stay in the athletes' village. All the other athletes that were classified out that games were sent home, and now the sport is at such a level where they won't accept any new athletes unless they've been classified prior to a Paralympics. But because of my osteopathic degree, I was able to stay in the village as a medical administrator for the Australian team. And so I was able to do literally every single thing that an athlete was able to do. I just couldn't compete. And they were some of the hardest memories of my career, going into the stands and watching the girls throw distances and jump distances that I was able to do. And I think I spent the entire 2 weeks in Beijing crying and just wearing these giant glasses and a hat on my head, trying to hide the fact that I was just so traumatised and so upset by it. And, certainly heading into those games, I thought that, you know, this new world for me as an elite athlete couldn't get any better and that my motivation couldn't be any higher. And leaving those games certainly left me with a whole bunch more motivation that I never knew existed.
But once again, you dust yourself off and you decide that you'll set yourself on the sights on the Vancouver Paralympic Games. How hard was the transition to say, okay, well, I'm an athlete today. I'm shot put, long jump, javelin. These are my events. But now I'm going to become an alpine competitor.
Yeah, I think, you know, challenges are certainly things that I'm up for. And it was incredibly hard because at that stage I wasn't a big I was just a beginner skier, let alone a ski racer. So I was so fortunate that the Australian team secured the services of Eric Bickerton. He became my pilot but also my coach in those early stages because I wasn't able to travel with the Australian team because I wasn't eligible for competition yet. And so I moved back to Colorado to a ski resort called Winter Park where they have a really great race program and learnt to ski and learnt to ski race. And in the early days, I would have to forerun events. So, you know, there would be a competition and I would go off first to test the run. That's essentially the role of a forerunner to make sure it flows nicely and the conditions are safe enough. And that was my introduction until my eyesight was at a level where I was eligible to compete. And looking back, they're probably some of the most fun that I've had as a ski racer because it was really such an early stage where I was just developing and growing so quickly and really had the opportunity to develop my skills over a good period of time, whereas the past sort of 5 to 6 years have been fairly frantic where there's always sort of a deadline that you're trying to hit with an impending Paralympics. So the transition was really hard and I was just so fortunate to have Eric by my side and teaching me as we go along, and in particular with things like the fear factor. You know, ski racing or most winter sports, when you add fear into the equation, it's just a completely different ball game. You know, on the athletics track, I was never fearful of my life or, you know, scared of falling out of a shot put circle. But throwing yourself down the mountain when you can't see the ground, you can't see pitch changes, snow condition changes, the gate just being around, you're skiing over 100 kilometres an hour, entrusting this person to provide you this auditory feedback into these Bluetooth headsets that you're wearing inside your helmets, and you're doing it at over 100 kilometres an hour, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a really short period of time. And I never was tested more so than when I'm on a mountain as a ski racer and as a vision impaired ski racer.
So what are you able to see when you're going down that mountain?
Not a lot. Most things are a blur. My vision will change depending on what's in the background. So if there's a mountain, if there's a town, if the sun's out, if it's overcast, if it's snowing, if there are trees, all of these visual changes that happen in the winter environment completely alter what I can and can't see. And so the role of the pilot and myself is to be able to pick up all these differences in a particular run, and they will change their communication to me depending on those things. So if it's a beautiful bluebird day, then there's a nice contrast and I might be able to see the ground or I might be able to see the pitch changes. But if it's a day where it's overcast and it's snowing, then I lose the majority of my vision, and all of a sudden it's, you know, things are a lot scarier and there's a lot more challenges that I have to overcome in terms of being confident in my skill sets when I don't have the visual feedback coming in.
Which is just frightening for all of us, if you close your eyes and contemplate that for just a second. Look, we could bang on about some of these things and go over each of your achievements before we get to Commonwealth Games. So I'll summarise them by: you went to the Vancouver Paralympics, win bronze. You go back to athletics and win silver and bronze at the World Championships, the IPC World Championships. Then you go to the London Paralympic Games. You've got injuries there, torn meniscus, but still finished fifth in the long jump and sixth in the javelin. Then you decide, of course, to go back to the Paralympic Games where you win bronze in the giant slalom. No long jump for Rio. So you decide, oh, of course, I'll just go and find something else to do.
Yeah, it's sort of, I guess, as early as Beijing, there was sort of, probably after Vancouver, realistically, there was this thought in my head that, hey, I could win a medal at a summer and a winter games. And I felt like I'd been pretty hard done by in Beijing, and then with London, having such a serious injury really just destroyed the campaign, and sort of felt like I'd had a bit of bad luck in the summer games. And when I received the phone call from my long jump coach, who also coached you, Johnny Bowis.
Used to coach me, Jess, like a long time ago, like 30 years ago.
I'm in that box now as well as a former athlete. I do miss Johnny's sessions, but when I received the phone call to be told that there was no long jump in Rio, it was, you know, just awful. And I remember I'd just come out of a train station in Melbourne, and as soon as I heard the words, I just burst into tears because I was like nothing is going right for me in these somersaults. You know, how can you just rip away an athlete's event. You know, Paralympic sport is at a level where you need to spend as much time and energy developing your skill sets as an able-bodied athlete, and that we know that it takes 8 to 10 years to get you into a real elite state. And I'd spent so much time learning and honing my skills as a long jumper, and then to just have it sort of ripped away from me and told that it was no longer an event was just shattering. And so I thought, well, you know, what am I going to do? Javelin had destroyed my knee, and I really didn't want to go back to it because I just knew that I'd already had a couple of serious knee injuries, one from being a netballer and then the one 6 weeks before London, which just completely destroyed the cartilage. And I thought, well, my knee's only going to continue to suffer if I'm putting the same amount of force and pressure through it. You know, but I want to win a summer medal. And so the logical next option was to, well, find another sport. And ironically, a similar timing was the Victorian Institute of Sport head cycling coach Glenn Doney had been watching me lift weights in the gym because strength and power are my assets as an athlete. And just as I'd gone up to have a conversation with my scholarship coach, he'd said, oh, well, actually, we've had one of the coaches ask if you'd like to try cycling. And when I was sort of thinking about it, I was looking at rowing or cycling. And my mum has been a great rower and is still a great rower and has some world records to her name on the indoor ergs and has been to the World Championships as a masters athlete on the ergs. And I was put out on the velodrome, and my first tandem pilot was Shane Kelly, and the local bike store down the road where I walked in to buy my first bike, which is a couple of hundred metres from where I live, happened to be the bike store that Gary Newand is the manager, and John Beasley, the Malaysian coach and former VIS coach, owns the shop. And it just seemed like everything was fate, and that I had all these incredible people around me that were offering me this support to try and become a track cyclist. And so that's where the journey began.
How were you when you first went onto you strapped yourself in, put the feet into the cleats and said, well, okay, off you go?
Yeah, I loved it. I think I was really fortunate where, you know, the velodrome, the steepness of the boards really didn't worry me. The speed I loved, because I kind of came from the other angle where, you know, most people start from being slow and building up, but I'd already been in a sport where, you know, extreme speed and risk was part of it. And so, you know, to go from skiing over 100k an hour in an unstable environment to being on the back of a tandem, which is pretty stable, a velodrome is very stable in terms of the environment, and going at, you know, 70k an hour, I was like, this is fun. I was on the back sort of like, wee, this is great. And so that adrenaline buzz that I got really replicated what I feel when I'm flying down the mountain, and it sort of was hooked straight away. I was like, yep, this is the sport for me.
And you were successful, you know, quickly as well. Gold medal at the Paracycling World Championships in the lead up to the Olympic Games, where and had set a world record over the 1,000 metre time trial. So when you got to the Games, how confident were you that you could achieve that goal of winning your, you know, coveted medal, having already done so twice in the Winter Games?
Yeah, it was tricky. The World Championship that Maddie and I won, and the world record we broke, was actually for the sprint. And the sprint, tragically, isn't a Paralympic event, and it's really disappointing that it's not, because it's the event that everyone loves watching, because there's so much speed involved. There's, you know, the head-to-head racing versus tandems is just so electrifying to see, and power and speed are what Maddie and I are both really strong at, whereas the 1 kilometre time trial is, you know, that 1 minute, 7 to 8 of just pure sort of speed and power, but also back-end capacity, which is not traditionally my strong suit, or Maddie's either, she would openly say. So, you know, we'd won bronze in that event at the World Championships, so we knew that heading into Rio we had the potential to be on the podium. And so to win that bronze was, I guess, probably about where we thought we would be, up against the might of British cycling and, you know, the huge amount of resources and funding that those guys receive certainly gives them a massive advantage.
you left out one other descriptor for the kilo, and that's pain, I think.
Because it's so painful.
It just racks it up as you as the lactic acid engulfs you.
Yeah, I mean, a tandem weighs, 100, you know, with two individuals plus the bike weight, there's about 150, 160 kilos that you've got to push from 0 kilometres an hour up to about 60k an hour within 150 metres. And then that's when you push into the saddle and you just have to hold on for dear life for the last 850 metres. The tandems react quite differently to a single bike. And so being able to, you know, that first lap is just so critical for us. It has to be up to speed because they drop speed and they build speed really quickly. So you want to make the most of being able to carry momentum through bends. And if you don't have the bike up to top speed as soon as possible, they just won't get there. So it's a lot of lactic acid.
So it sounds painful already. I'm not sure what's worse, going down a mountain without being able to see or riding like that. The relationship you have with your pilot, Madison Jansen, and she was with you in Rio, then she wasn't going to be with you at the Commonwealth Games upcoming, but now she's back on board. You must have a tremendous amount of trust, but also a really strong confidence in what your pilot's able to deliver for you.
Yeah, absolutely. The role is critical. You know, without them, I can't be on a velodrome. I don't have enough eyesight to ride a single bike for myself on the boards, and I can't be successful unless they're able to put down the performance. Sitting on the back as a stoker, I have no ability to control or steer the bike, so everything is left up to the pilot and trusting that they will have the right strategy in place, that they will be able to steer the bike you know, on the right lines. And so I think it's a really unique skill set in the world of elite sport and high performance, to be able to surrender that control and that vulnerability of your ability to be successful and perform to somebody else. And it's the same in ski racing. You know, I can't perform unless they're delivering the right things to me. And so to be able to hand over that control and trust that they will get the job done is really, really hard. And it's really hard to find the right people to put on there. It is different. You know, we're completely dependent on each other. It's a huge team effort, but it's also, we have different goals. And, you know, for Maddie, she wants to make it as a single bike rider. And so, you know, her perspective of the role of being on the tandem is different to my perspective, where, you know, it is my entire world. So it's a real art form, and it's always tricky trying to find the right pilot or guide, whether it be ski racing or on the track.
The Gold Coast Commonwealth Games Velodrome, the Anna Mears Velodrome in Brisbane. Have you been up there? Do you like the feel of it, the smell, the new pine and all of that?
Yeah, it's a fantastic velodrome. We were up there a couple of weeks ago for a training camp, and, you know, it's got all the beautiful features that a brand new facility would have. It's bright and airy. There's a lot of natural light. The boards are quite steep, which means it's a really fast track. Also, being a relatively new track means it runs fast. The bends are quite long, so the tandems are able to generate a lot of speed through those bends. So it's going to be incredibly fast racing at the Commonwealth Games, and it's also going to make for some pretty hot action when we go head-to-head against the other girls.
And who's the opposition? Is it the same athletes that you're up against in Rio, competing for one of the home countries of England, Wales, Scotland, etc., from the Great Britain team?
Exactly. British Cycling are well known for their credentials in their programs, and they have a lot of tandems coming out of their system. So the English pairing of Sophie Thornhill and Helen Scott, who are the main British Cycling tandem pairing, they are certainly our big rivals. We had, you know, they won silver to us at the World Champs in 2016. Last year I had a different pilot. We qualified first but unfortunately finished fourth due to some restrictions in training and things like that. And so certainly they will be our big rival that we'll be up against. And there's a couple of good Scottish teams as well. So plenty of tandems coming out of the UK.
Well, it's good to have the competition and keep you on your game. Fantastic to see the 36-strong member team that was announced today, and you know what stars when you look at the likes of the reigning champion Steph Morton, Matthew Glatzer, Nettie Edmondson, to see Cameron Meyer and Carly McCullough come back. Alex Edmondson on the road with Shannon Melseed, who won the national titles in Ballarat recently, Catherine Garfoot and Matty Heyman, who returns as well. Everywhere you look, obviously we don't have some of the big European pros. They're back with their European teams on the road. So, but it's still an exceptionally strong team, and you must feel very proud when you stand up there alongside them.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some, you know, phenomenal athletes in the group, and it's a rare opportunity for a para athlete to have that chance to be integrated, and that was certainly another alluring factor for me, sticking with track cycling and not aiming for Piao Chang. Was, you know, it's great to be integrated with the able bods. It's great for them to be able to see just how phenomenal para tandem racing is, and for them to get to see how fast we go, and also for us to be able to train alongside them. You know, people that we don't often see because, you know, the road and the track circuits and the para circuit is different. So it's nice to be able to see what those guys do and be training alongside them and get the opportunity to see them as well.
A couple of ones before we let you go, Jess. You carried the Queen's Baton recently down in Geelong. That must have been good fun.
It was. It was really fun. You know, my hometown, you know, Geelong is such a sport mad place, and it's where, you know, I learned everything about being an athlete as a kid and as a teenager. So it was a huge honour for me to be able to carry the baton down at the Eastern Beach waterfront.
With the Mayor of Geelong, Cameron Ling, and I think Richard Coleman was there as well, one of the great wheelchair racers for Australia. So that was wonderful. What are your aspirations for the Games? I'm pretty certain I know what your answer will be here, but do you have something in particular that you're looking for?
Or is it just as simple
as, yeah. Well, is it just as simple as that?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, the Tandem Match Sprint, which is our first event on April 5, Maddie and I will certainly be looking to break the world record. We know the English are in hot form, so there's sort of a bit of a race at the moment to crack the 11-second barrier for a flying 200 metre, and I'd love to be able to do that on home soil in front of, you know, family and friends. And then, you know, obviously continue through the sprint rounds and win a gold medal. The 1 kilometre time trial will be more challenging. With Maddie only recently coming back onto the tandem, she hasn't had a lot of opportunity to do that back-end training. So as a little bit of background, the able-bodied girls for a time trial only ride 500 metres, whereas on the tandem we ride 1 kilometre. So the training and the capacities required of an athlete are quite different between a 500-metre effort and a 1 kilometre time trial. So that'll be a little bit more challenging for us just because we haven't had a huge amount of time to get Maddie in the 1K training bracket. So for us, the biggest focus is that first event being the tandem match sprint.
It's exciting, isn't it? Do I need to remind you it's 6 Fridays to go?
It's a little bit scary. I have a world championship beforehand in Rio.
Back to Rio.
There's a lot to happen within those 6 Fridays, Dave. Yep. It's a little bit scary to think about all the travel that's going to be happening before that 6 Friday.
Well, you do know it takes a long time to get to Rio too. It seems like it's on the other... In fact, I'm not sure that there's... Other than going to New York or one of those locations, it's about as far away as we Australians have to go. But at least you've been there before and you know everything about it.
That's right. It's just a really long way away. But we've got a very short turnaround time. So I think we have, from landing in Brisbane, we have about 5 days before we race. So it's, you know, short turnaround, but the other girls that we're racing against are in exactly the same boat. And, you know, it's pretty exciting. Coming home to a major championship, I just can't wait. It's just so exciting.
We've spoken to a number of para-athletes in our journey along Gold Coast Gold, Melissa Tapper and Kurt Fernley, and I have to say, Jess, it's fantastic to see a fully integrated competition. Medal is equal to a medal, and I think the broadcast will reflect that. The excitement in the stands will reflect that. That you're racing for Australia in just another event like all of the other events there, and we can't wait to watch it unfold.
Yeah, thank you. It's so exciting for us as well. You know, we go just as fast as the able-bodied girls, and I'm just excited that, you know, mainstream media are getting on board and they're seeing firsthand just how phenomenal, you know, our para athletes are and that they are the real deal. And, you know, people are going to get to see just how cool tandem racing is, which is really exciting.
And when you've done all that, you can go back to the number one event, the long jump.
That's right. Oh, I just need to convince them to put it back in, that's all.
We'll get to work on it now.
Minor problem.
Hey, Jess, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. Best of luck at the World Championships and can't wait to see you in action at the Commonwealth Games.
Thank you so much.
Jess Gallagher there on Gold Coast Gold. That's it for this edition of Gold Coast Gold. A reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an edition. You can join us at Commonwealth Games Australia on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the news regarding the Australian team for the 2018 Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. Until next week, thanks for your company on Gold Coast Gold.